Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. In our next conversation, we'll talk about Mark Hoffman's interactions with church leaders. As you can see from previous conversations, he had a tangled web of interactions with lots of people. George Throckmorton talks about these interactions. Check out our conversation. I also want to remind everybody, it's just a few days left until our first Gospel Tangents Insider meeting. Go to tinyurl.com/GTInsider to register. We're going to we've just got a few spots left, but we'll allow as many people in as we can for our first Hangout meeting. It'll be a lot of fun, and you can talk to me, and we'll talk more about the Hoffman bombings and answer some of your questions there. Now back to our conversation. Let's just talk a little bit about this, because this is, from what I understand, at least from the book Salamander, mm-hmm. So it sounds like Mark had a lot of irons in the fire.
Oh, he did.
So he's trying to sell Oath of a Freeman for $1 million, and that's being slower for whatever. He had promised the church he was going to sell them the Salamander letter. No, not the Salamander, the McClellan collection.
Right.
And so I believe he was supposed to do that on, I want to say it was Monday that the first two bombs went off. And then I thought the church said that they wanted to still meet with him Tuesday, so he had to meet. He had an appointment with, I believe it was Elder Oaks, Elder Pinnock. I don't remember who.
Elder Pinnock was the one that was dealing with him.
Yeah, and so can you talk a little bit about what was the relationship between Mark Hoffman and Elder Pinnock?
Business. I mean, Elder Pinnock was had a history. In fact, I've known him. He was my wife's bishop when we got married, and so I've knew him for a long time before this. And he was, you know, as much a victim as anybody. What happened here? It's kind of interesting. On the McClellan collection, we're going to be talking about as far as the meetings with the church. I don't know. I don't know anything about them. It didn't give me any reason to be concerned one way or another. I had no interest in his dealings with the church. I really didn't. So I'm ignorant on that. All I know is what was told me. But as far as the McClellan collection, he found a document which was a land deed. I gotta get diverted here, go on a tangent again. It's a land deed. There's an old theory called the Solomon Spaulding theory. Are you aware of that?
I am aware of that.
Okay. But one of the problems, it's never been given much credibility. They think that Solomon Spaulding wrote it and
wrote the Book of Mormon.
Just copied for the Book of Mormon. But there was really no relationship between Solomon Spaulding and Joseph Smith that could be found. So it's not given a whole lot of credit. I mean, there's always people that bring it up, but in my opinion, it's not given credit because they never met until too late, until this land deed showed up. And it's a land deed that was all signed by Solomon Spaulding and Martin Harris. So it showed there was a relationship between Solomon Spaulding and Martin Harris. And the date was appropriate. And this is the document that Mark Hoffman showed Hugh Pinnock and Al Rust and some others. And he says, this is part of the McClellan collection. And the story I heard, and I don't know what the real story is because I heard a lot of stories, but after Joseph Smith died, McClellan broke into his office and stole a lot of things and then left for Texas or whatever. I don't know. That's what I heard.
Broke into whose office?
Joseph Smith's office after he got killed and stole a lot of documents that showed he was a crook or whatever.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I hear a lot of stories too, and I'm not a historian. I don't know. But I do know that this document, he said it was part of the McClellan collection. And you can see it's damaging because it shows him and Solomon Spaulding were together. And he got a $186,000 loan on the basis of showing that to Hugh Pinnock and said, this is part of the McClellan collection. And there's other damaging documents too. And I understand he also showed it to a couple of others and got some more money. So he was double dipping. He played everybody against everybody there. Hmm. And so this document, which I later got and authenticated and found out he changed the date at the top, the land deed was correct, except he changed the date and he also put in the name of Solomon Spaulding. Other than that, it was genuine. Oh, and Martin Harris. He put in the name of Solomon Spaulding and Martin Harris, it was a land deed for, I think, Alma Spaulding or something like that. But if you have a witness, Solomon Spaulding at the bottom and Martin Harris there, those signatures were both added and the date was modified. So, you know, a genuine document, except for those mm-hmm. things. And, of course, that's what made it valuable. And so that was the basis of the McClellan collection. And he said there's a lot of other damaging evidence, too. And so it's very controversial. And so I don't know who he would have been meeting with at the church. I mean, I'm not saying, yeah, I don't know. But I do know that that was it. Now, later on the McClellan collection, I found, when I went through the room down in the basement of the police department when I first entered the case, I found a whole box full of documents signed by McMillan. Not McClellan, but McMillan. And I just read through them, and they're historical documents from 1800. And he had a lot of these things. I don't know whether they were valuable. I don't know who McMillan was or anything else. But all he would have had to have done would be to change two letters, and it would now be the McClellan collection instead of the McMillan collection. Hmm. And that's something that he did. So I could see a work in progress. I mean, the missing 116 pages, he'd been working on that for 2 years. And he did a whole lot of research on that, from syntax analysis and so forth and et cetera. He was ready to go. He knew the names of the books and had a picture of how big they were and stuff like that. He had so many irons in the fire. I think that was his trip up. It was so easy for him to make money. He just kept doing it more and more and more, and he couldn't keep everything straight. Hmm. So I'm not sure on that meeting with the church. Anyway.
Yeah, and just for the people who are listening to this, from what I understand was he had a meeting because he'd gotten a big loan from that Hugh Pinnock had authorized at First Interstate Bank, and then the loan came due and he hadn't paid it back, so the church was putting a lot of pressure on him. I know Kurt Bench said that Mark was very hard to get a hold of. And so Steve Christensen had come and said, hey, you're going to be in a lot of trouble with the church if you don't pay this loan, and that sort of thing. So it sounds like there was a lot of financial pressures. He's got these pressures from the Oath of the Freeman. He's getting pressures from McClellan because he hasn't delivered. Apparently this farmer. Sounds like it's a multi...
Well, he was. He was getting a lot of... Ironically, he went down to see Brent Ashworth on Sunday, and Brent was chewing him out because one of his checks bounced. So he wrote him out another check, which also bounced.
Oh, my goodness.
But see, that's Mark. He didn't care because nobody ever physically assaulted him. The church isn't going to send out the Danites to kill him. Porter Rockwell's not around anymore. And, you know, they can threaten him and all that other stuff. It didn't matter. But he is getting pressure. Mm-hmm. And he's getting it from many sources because he's been double-dipping. He's been, like, again, the McClellan collection. He sold the rights to that to two different people for over $100,000. So a lot of pressure. But then when somebody hits him, that's the cork off the bottle. It suddenly explodes. He's not going to take any more. And it all happened within that period of time, yes.
Okay. So Brent was giving him a lot of grief. Steve was giving him some grief.
Al Rust was giving him some grief.
I mean,
was giving him some grief.
This 3x5 card, was that kind of a hit list?
Well, that's what we suspect. We found that in his belongings. He never addressed it. That was totally speculation on our part. We thought, well, why are his five friends on that card, and why is Steve Christensen's name have the asterisk by it, and why was Steve the one blown up?
Well, he was the only one that had the concrete nails in his bomb, too. Is there significance to that?
Oh, yeah, because that'll kill somebody. Again, he wanted to go to his funeral, so he had to make sure he was dead.
And so he didn't...
The others he didn't care about.
He was just fine with injuring them, although I guess Kathy died anyway. But.
Well, yeah, she died, but again, he didn't care whether she picked it up or anybody picked it up. If they would have seen the package in the driveway, which was by the car... And if they would have called the police, and the police would have come up and says, boy, you're lucky. You've got a bomb here. It would have still given the link between the two for the police to follow up on the investigation. Unfortunately, she picked it up. And that's what caused the bomb. And with Brent Ashworth, again, it's a bomb. It doesn't matter whether he kills him or not. It's an excuse for him to go into hiding. So the motives have changed a little bit.
Hmm. And so he called this farmer that same day of the bombs and said, I got to go to a funeral, or?
We're not absolutely sure. I'm not, but I believe that's true. Again, I never spoke to him.
Uh-huh.
He actually came to my house once, and I got the privilege at 10:30 at night of
the farmer you're talking about.
Yeah, they flew him down here, and I was at home. That's where the lab was, down in my basement. My basement lab and Hoffman's basement lab both flew the FBI's multi-story lab. But anyway, he came down, and I had the privilege, and I say that sarcastically, of coming in at 10:30 and walking out after looking at it and say, sir, I'm sorry, you just wasted $100,000. On this piece of paper.
Oh boy, that made him feel good.
And then the investigator that brought him in flew him back, and I never saw him before. What I'm telling you is what the other investigators told me.
Okay.
I never interacted with the people very. That's why I liked about it. I got out of the police department business and into the crime lab because I don't like talking to people that much. The ones I dealt with are mostly dead, and they don't cause too much. You know, conversational problems. So the information I'm giving you is what was relayed to me by the various investigators. I've considered myself kind of a spoke in a wheel. You've got a lot of investigators out here, and they're all doing their piece and so forth, but they all come down and talk to me whenever it comes to a document. And there's a lot of things I don't know about regarding the investigation that may not be related to the documents. But anything related to the documents, even the investigators don't know because I never shared it with all the investigators.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was telling you about the hot tub. To show you, Mark was doing the same thing. He's like the hub and all these people around him. We was talking to one of the people that said Mark had a hot tub and he invited people over at times to get in the hot tub with their wives or whatever, I don't know. But they was telling us that one time, they knew that Mark knew President Hinckley because they were in the hot tub and the phone rang and Mark got out and went over and talked to it, talked on the phone for about 10 minutes and come over and said, well, that was President Hinckley. He was just calling me about some stuff. So they all believed he knew him personally and knew his phone number. But when we researched that, President Hinckley was over in Germany at the time. He wasn't even here. So it wasn't President Hinckley that called him. And when we talked to President Hinckley, he made the comment, he says, oh yeah, I know him. I've seen him a couple of times, but I don't know anything about him. It wasn't until after the investigation people started talking to him. He learned more about Mark Hoffman after the bombings than he knew beforehand.
Oh, wow.
But Mark had everybody believe that he knew him personally and had his private number and all this other stuff.
Wow.
And that's the way he talked to each one of the people. And if you talk to the people, they'll each have their own theory, and they'll think that Mark was telling the truth. We had one of the people that told us that he found the salamander letter, and he was threatened, and he was on the verge of being arrested when he finally said, oh, no, I didn't find it. Mark did. And, in fact, he was telling us the truth, but all he knew was what Mark told him, and he believed him. Everybody believes Mark.
Wow.
He was a good con artist.
Yes, he was excellent at it. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with George Throckmorton. In our next and final conversation with George, we'll talk about why Mark didn't get the death penalty.
Politics. It has always intrigued me, the amount of politics that takes place in everything. Criminal investigations are the same thing.
I hope you enjoyed that short clip from our next interview. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please go to our patreon.com/gospeltangents and subscribe for just $5 a month. If you'd like a transcript of this, please click the yellow subscribe button at gospeltangents.com, and I'll send you this and all future transcripts. Also, if you'd like a paperback like we've got here, those are available at our website at amazon.com. Just do a search for Gospel Tangents. Please get all updates at our Facebook page at facebook.com/gospeltangents. We're also on Twitter at Gospel Tangents. You can also get transcripts individually at our website, gospeltangents.com/shop. Finally, make sure that you subscribe on our Apple Podcast page. Just do a quick search for Gospel Tangents there and give us a 5-star review while you're at it. Thanks again for listening. Your support helps create more Mormon history classes and podcasts such as this, and so I really appreciate you listening. please share with your friends.
Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some more of our great videos. Thanks again.